This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good morning, this is Talking Devils, the leading independent Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined by Manchester United legend Paul Parker and Dave Murphy to talk over, unfortunately, a familiar, disappointing weekend at Manchester United. If you're watching live on YouTube, feel free to subscribe and like and share the video and get your comments and questions in. If you're watching the replay, comment. We do reply to the ones we get on the replays. If you're listening back on the audio podcast, please subscribe and leave a positive review on the platform you're listening on. First of all, morning, Paul. How are you doing? How was your weekend?
Fine, Wayne. I'm okay. Weekend was, it turned into something that related to Manchester United, to be perfectly honest. Good, bad or indifferent, you end up talking about them, and you could talk to anybody, the fishmonger, anybody, and everybody wants to talk about what's going on. People want to know. And so that's my weekend was spent with where I was. All everyone was asking me. I wish I was a fountain of knowledge about Manchester United. I could be like you then, Wayne.
Oh, yeah. Wow. All right. Well, weak at the knees already. It's not even 2 minutes past 10. Unlikely to top that, Dave. I know you're usually quick to give me a compliment, so how are you doing? You all right?
I'm Googling compliment. No. It was an okay weekend. I've long gotten past allowing Manchester United to ruin my weekend. Over the past 10 years, it's done it too many times. So, yeah, eager to talk about Manchester United today, though. So, yeah. Other than that, great weekend.
Good stuff. Just so everyone knows that when Dave Googles compliment, the result search comes up with salt and vinegar. All right, so Manchester United 0, Crystal Palace 1. Disappointing, despite my laughing. Difficult game to sort of analyse, really, because we were so poor. I mean, there's a lot of criticism to go around, unfortunately. Although from what was available, I know we talked about possible selections last week. I felt from what was available, it's probably the right choice. I mean, you could argue Annibal should have started Garnacho as well. But that's maybe with the benefit of hindsight. I felt, considering the run of form that Annibal had been in and the fact that Mount was back and he played all right in the League Cup game, that you've got to start Mount over Annibal. You can't go the other way just yet. So I thought he actually made the right choice with the selection. We were just... And obviously the left-back issue we'll talk about, but it was so disappointing in terms of what we then put forward. Concede this early goal. Amrabat, in his unfamiliar position, he's conceding a lot of silly fouls. One of them, they get a free kick from. Cross isn't that great, actually, but the finish is exceptional. And from there, United's response is unbelievably flat. They don't do much. I mean, Casemiro has a couple of chances straight after the goal. A shot from about 25 yards just goes wide. He has an header from a corner. The half time comes and goes, and you expect the team to come out and play with some kind of verve, and they don't do that. You bring on Garnacho, change the system up a little bit. United still offering nothing. Garnacho looked all right in flashes, but United were... they had all this possession and didn't control the game. Palace were quite happy to let them have the ball. I mean, I think Bruno has a chance. Ireland has a couple of chances. One forces the goalkeeper into a save. Amrabat clips the bar with a sort of speculative effort. But apart from that, United, they didn't make Palace work hard for the win. And that's something that we've seen too often. Palace didn't have to work hard, really. And they come away with a 1-0 win. They've got a decent record at Old Trafford of late in the league. And they got another result. Paul, we'll talk about Rashford for a little moment in a bit, but in general, what did you make of what you saw the weekend?
Well, I got what I expected. It's never good to play the same team back to back. Generally, doesn't always work out as like two wins. It doesn't, very rare, especially with Crystal Palace for the team they put out. And you knew midweek that their two key players are the centre halves, and neither of them played.
Yeah.
And they bring them both in, and they definitely add something, especially Gehi, who's a wonderful left-sided centre-half. Great left foot. Even though he's right-footed, he can use both feet equally as good. But what United was lacking, again, was energy. I'm just wondering how you got someone like Hannibal, and like you said at the top of this, you said, like, with Mount and that, Mount had to come in. I say, why? Why has Mount got to come in? Because he's been kind of out for a while. Hannibal has proved himself. And yes, he cost 50 million. But what is 50 million now when you look at it in that sense? When you think we've got a young boy who's done well, it would have asked the question of Mount. How is he going to deal with that, being left out of a game because someone young's come in? And when you look at what Hannibal does, first and foremost, he was enjoying himself. He wants to prove a point. And he earned that right to be back at Manchester United and first team squad because of what he'd done last season in the Championship, where I said before, he could have sulked at being there. He could have just gone through the motions and lived off the fact of coming from United and tarnished his reputation. He didn't. He built his reputation. Comes back. He knows he's played well in previous games because I'm sure the managers told him, his teammates would have said something to a young lad to keep him going. But people have seen it in the newspapers. Everyone's talking about him and all the media outlets regarding football. And then he leaves him out. The person who covers more yards than anybody, but with a little bit more of an end product, he's not just a chicken with no head. There's something in his head. There's a plan in his head. What he's doing. And he gets left out against Crystal Palace, who have got, like you mentioned, a good record. And they do play with a bit of energy. They've got, runners all like everywhere. They play on the counter because you mentioned about United's possession against Palace. They let every team have the ball. Doesn't matter. They play at home. They're happy for you to have the ball. They're not interested in having the ball. And they were content with United, especially knowing that United's creativity is about as good as a kid in the kindergarten. So it was disappointing that he made changes with players who had been doing a good job just getting United through and adding something that's been missing. And talk about that game, that was a key point, is that there was no energy, no one wanted to close anybody down. Mostly made Palace look better than what they really are because they had more time. And I look at that and I'm still not understanding it. Maybe the game has changed and gone beyond my years now, but I still believe that the first thing you do, especially when I went and played for Manchester United, the first five minutes at Old Trafford was so important to really grab hold of the game, because if you could grab hold of it and a team like Crystal Palace come in there, or any team at that given time when I was playing, you knew there was a fear factor initially, and then straight away you just cement that in by really pulling it on them, get the first throw near the corner flag, get the first corner, get the first shot of goal, hopefully score the first goal. Not anymore. It's people just going through them and think it's just going to happen. And it's just really, in my opinion, this is looking like maybe the worst of all at this moment in time, the worst season of all, the way it started, the way everyone is, the way everybody is talking about Ten Hag and trying to talk in a past tense and about him. And I feel sorry for the guy, to be perfectly honest. And people are talking about a change of manager. There's been too many change of managers. The problem is so many changes of managers, but yet the same personnel.
Yeah.
The same tools are in the box, Wayne. So what do? You're going to keep doing that? Like we say, it's 10 years since the gaffer retired, and there's been nothing. All there's been is a peak and a massive drop.
Yeah.
It'll be exactly the same again. It's going that way again. It can't change at this moment in time unless something's going to happen in January and it's going to be wow, and then it needs to be built again. Can it do that? No one knows.
Yeah, at this point, we'll talk about this in a moment. The bigger malaise. Got one of my little rants lined up. Not. It's a mini rant. Left space for you guys to go into one today. A couple of comments before I come to you, Dave-O. Daryl says, totally agree. Annibal should have started. So maybe I'm in the minority in terms of in hindsight, obviously, yeah, it probably should have done, because once the game was moving away from United and we didn't bring him on, you're losing it completely, aren't you? He says, a young, tenacious player. Love the fact he has a bit of bite to his game too. Yeah, one of the observations that was made on Tuesday night from someone I go to the game with, I see the games, he said that, you know, Annibal didn't actually have a lot of touches on Tuesday night, but it's what he did off the ball. And, you know, United's biggest issue on Saturday was what they didn't do off the ball. Patrick, good morning, mate. Are we doing well? He says, good morning, guys. I've been reflecting after the game about our form. Do we have to accept this phase in the rebuild won't go in straightforward upward trajectory? With the exception of Pep and maybe Mourinho first time around at Chelsea, it takes 2 or 3 years to become competitive. I'm going to come to this on a wider point in a moment. Yeah. Are you United fans able to roll with the punches of frustrating defeats, or will the pressure prove too much for everyone? There have been dark days before the success arrives. As you can tell from Dave and myself, maybe not so much Dave, but definitely myself, you can tell we're old enough to have been around the block to witness some smaller dark days under Sir Alex, such that they were in the early times. But yeah, not many for us in our lifetime, to be fair. And Paul was obviously playing elsewhere and arrived as part of the group that brought the success back to the club. Dave, before I get into the nuts and bolts of all the big issues, talk about the game. Rashford, I know everyone's criticising him, rightly so, but it's not one I really want to get into too much today, because we've talked about him too often. And really, there is no hiding from how poor he was, but he was also playing as a left-sided forward without a left-back in support, and we badly missed that balance. And for how good Amrabat was in the midweek, and, you know, everyone says he's a revolution as a free role left back, and, you know, he played all right as a midfielder on Saturday, but he just didn't play all right as a left back. He was there as a left back, unfortunately. That was the issue. And the space that we had, I mean, thankfully we weren't playing against a team who were more ambitious, because they would have taken that space to town and absolutely been ruthless with it. Palace under Hodgson are quite happy to sit on them 1-0s. And I'm not criticising or being condescending, because it gets them the results as it did. There are many things to be disappointed about what we've seen on Saturday. Someone even commented to me on Twitter, really good observation. I don't think it's that bad, but he likened it to when we lost against Norwich under Van Gaal at Old Trafford, you know, saying that, you know, yeah, sorry. But there are many low points to call on. Which of the low points disappointed you most on Saturday?
I think not playing Hannibal from the start was the biggest mistake. I know Mason Mount had a really, really good game on Tuesday or Wednesday night, but so did Hannibal. You know, so dropping one and not the other kind of disappointed me. If you're gonna take one player out, it has to be Mount, because Hannibal is the only one. And one of the biggest positives from the midweek game was, and it was commented a lot on social media, was how a lot of the players, and, you know, Hannibal especially, was chasing back all the time, you know, was making up ground, and that's what we needed on Saturday, was someone to, with Amrabat playing out on as a left back, which was a terrible, we surely have someone else to play out there. The guy is getting killed. He really is. I mean, can we put Johnny Evans out there? Can we put Lindelof out there? I mean,
to move Gallo there. That's what he's played there in that position. Just swap them over, you know.
It's just baffling, because anytime, and we've only seen Amrabat in flashes in midfield. He's probably been one of our better midfielders. He's played really, really well. And I was disappointed to see that, but it's so easy to play Manchester United at Old Trafford these days. Teams come, they sit back, they know they're going to get a chance, whether it's from a free kick, from a corner, they're going to get a chance. And they're going to, you know, lately they're going to put it away. So, you know, even the midweek game where it was 72% possession for United, teams are just happy to let United have the ball, as Paul said. They're just happy to let them do it because we don't do much up front. So teams are coming to Old Trafford now. They're just instructed to sit back and are told, you know, if we nick a point here, great. We may get three because that's the way it seems to be these days. And we'll get an opportunity and we'll get a chance. We just have to stick it away. We just can't break teams down these days. We really can't. And it's not something new for Manchester United. I mean, you know, even back when Paul was playing, teams came to Old Trafford and just sat back. But back then, they sat back because they wanted to keep the scoreline down. Now they sit back because they feel they can win the game. They sit back, wait for the opportunity, and get it. Like you said, it was a badly given away free kick. The finish was exceptional. The marking was terrible. And that's what teams are coming to Old Trafford to do. They're just coming to sit back, but they're getting more opportunities and more chances because this team is still so fragile. I just don't see where Mason Mount and Bruno Fernandes playing the same team, unfortunately. When they both play, one of them just disappears, you know. Previously, it was Mount. But on Saturday, I mean, you had to look around to see if Fernandes was playing. He was obsolete. And that's not a criticism directly at him of being a bad player. It's just that I think he has to do other things when Mason Mount is playing. And of course, I don't want to keep bashing Rashford. But you said earlier on that we had, you know, a few flashes from Garnaccio. He should be starting, Wayne. I'm sorry. I don't get this whole thing with Marcus Rashford getting in every week. I really don't. And not being substituted 99% of the time. But it was disappointing, but it wasn't a major shock. And that's the disappointing part of it all. It wasn't a major shock. So with teams that just come to Old Trafford, they sit back, they wait for an opportunity, they get a goal, they sit back again, and we just can't seem to break teams down. And that's the biggest disappointment for me right now.
Yeah. I think the thing you mentioned there about it not being a disappointment is an issue, because you think that we've kicked on from that. You know, you see the manager lift a trophy, you see a team with identity, you see them moving in the right direction, then we move back, seemingly two steps back after taking a massive step forward. Patrick says, on the left-back issue, you can't legislate for two injuries and a lone cover being injured. Anyone covering there would be at risk, whether it's Dalot, Evans, Lindelof. Where's young Fernandes? I think Fernandes went on loan. There was some talk that they don't think he's physical enough for the Premier League. Dalot, like I said, the sensible choice, because he's played there before, and at least when he's there, even if he's not brilliant there, he's used to the position and he knows the responsibility of that position. I mean, Paul must have been having nightmares watching a fullback, and there's territory where there's no fullback at Manchester United. We were all having fever dreams, wondering what was going on. You know, it's not Amrabat's fault completely, but he's still an experienced professional footballer who's played international football at a World Cup. He should know that's where you pick to play. I mean, he said in the week, and he was joking, I'll play anywhere, I'll play in goal. But if you pick to play left back, play left back, because unfortunately that's where we need you.
Sorry, real quickly though, and maybe it's a question for Paul. I mean, taking a midfielder and playing him left back, I got to assume it's easier to take a centre half and play him left back because his main job is defending. So I'm still baffled at why we don't push one of our centre halves out to the left or the right.
Yeah, I would say, you'd look what he had available. The one, like Wayne said about Dalot's the one you would put in that left-back position because the fact of he's done that on quite a few occasions. But then you're looking at someone to play right-back. So the one to play right-back would be Lindelof.
Yeah.
And then you use Johnny Evans.
Yeah.
Maybe then on that left side. That's what I think that gives you a chance. Lindelof isn't a full-back. You can just see that there's something... I don't know. I think you have to just. I just know people who he doesn't. He doesn't look like a fullback. He looks a centre half out of position, but you know he's not a slouch. He's got decent agility, but you miss out maybe on the fact of him going forward from that kind of wide position. Even though he's comfortable with the ball, it's a different game to him out there. So that's what he could have done, just to kind of make that bit easier and get people in that back line who know the back line. If you play Amrabat, all of a sudden you're playing 100% midfield player and a quality midfield player at left back, and you're holding him back. It's, say, like putting a Roy Keane there or a Brian Robson there. You're kind of you're putting them there, and their first thought is, yes, is to do a job, but they're always going to be like to kind of go a little bit more inside and to look. Always first thought is to go forward. The first thought of when the ball's coming in towards them is to attack the ball, rather than, as a defender, you think, so if I'm in it, there's space behind me. It's better if I let the ball get there and not give up this territory too early, otherwise someone's going to go in there and threaten my left-sided centre-half. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he got that. I was shocked that he played him there again. Even though he'd done okay before, if you remember, that was a different game. Same team, 100% a different game. And Roy, you know, he was up, you know, the godfather of football. Roy just couldn't believe it when he mostly went, well, now we're going to take a liberty now with this one. And that's what they've done. So, see, I'm just seeing already about, talks about Roy played right back, but we are talking about Roy. And when Amrabat talks about, oh, we'd go in goal, if Hazard, someone would ask Roy to go in goal, and Roy would be the best player on the pitch. That's the difference. Roy would talk it, but Roy would go in goal, and he'll do something, and he'll turn around and maybe say to Schmeichel at the time, that's how you do it. He'd done it to me a few times when I'm waiting to make a tackle. He's just gone bang, took the tackle, looked round, and he goes, I can't say what he actually said, but he said, words are effective. That's how you do that. And, and what's the best thing you do when Roy's had a go at you? You say nothing, because you're never going to win.
Well, the other point is with that, I mean, Keane did play right back, and that was, I think, at that point, Fergie was a little bit reluctant to throw Neville in full time at right back, so he put Keane there.
He did, I was out at that time. They tried David May there. We'll leave that alone, talking about David May, and when he went out to Gothenburg. But then, he put Roy in there, and Roy done a good job, but you can't have a player like Roy playing at right back. It's a complete waste. Even though he'll do a great job, it's a waste. So the boss had to think about it, and the rest is history. Anyway, go away. Stop talking about it, because I might get too emotional about it.
But the point I was making is that, at least on that side, if you swap them over, at least the positional aspects, because Amrabat's so right-footed, that it'd make a lot. So if he's playing right back, then at least he's not moving to compensate and leaving spaces. And
that works. I know what you're saying, Wayne, and that you are right. I mean, if I play on the left, I mean, people said to me, I couldn't play left back. It affects me because I'm on my left side. To go out on my left side, I had enough problems going out on my right side before anyone says it, but going out on my left side is a completely different mindset. He's, especially being predominantly right-footed, he was always, when he did go into the field, he was going further and further away from that left back spot. So if he'd have been left-footed, it would have been a lot easier, because he would have been playing more going to his left, so the space wouldn't have been as big. So that was a tactical mistake. I don't often question anybody, because there's a reason why they do that job and I don't. But I think that was a mistake on his part in doing that, trying to do that again up against a wily old fox in Roy Hodgson.
Yeah. So we'll get on to the wider issues. Dave did his little interruption asking. Actually, it's probably the best part of the podcast, asking for Paul's expert knowledge of playing at fullback, which I could have done, but I'm not clever enough to come up with that in my notes. Casey, morning, mate. Hope you're well. He says, we've loaned out Williams, who scored for Ipswich, Fernandez and Saltzellers for 4 million. Those three left while we only had one fit left back. So I think this is on 10 odd. Maybe a little bit harsh, because I think that you had an offer for Tellers. You've got to take time to move him on. And Williams, I agree with Fernandez. I would have kept Fernandez, even though people are saying he's not physical enough. I think Williams is at that point where he needs to go and get regular football, and he wasn't helping him being at United. Anyway, so you've got to see what United are going to do in terms of response. And we've said that too often this season already. 4 defeats from 7 league games. And I think it's been said it's the worst start to a Premier League season It's the worst start that we've had, and that's been said a few times in recent years. So we're really outdoing ourselves with that. But what do you do in terms of a reaction? Because the Brentford game last season was infamous because he called them all into training, made them run the compensatory distance from the game before. You can't do that all the time. And I think like you've got a situation where the manager has got credit in the bank. Enough of us have seen that to say, all right, this isn't on him. We've seen the improvements and we've seen the difference that he's made. But it does sort of feel like that era under Ferguson. Patrick was mentioning, I think it was Patrick mentioning it earlier. Let's have a quick look. About the peaks and troughs that we had under Ferguson. And there was that period where Whiteside and McGraw, and I'm only using those players to represent the era I'm talking about, because we're talking about a lot of players, you know, like Colin Gibson and players like that who had to move on. But you've had a peak. You know, Fergie finished second in his first full season, and then it went low for a bit, and to a point where there was talk of him getting sacked, obviously. But I think like now you've moved on enough players like Ferguson did, and what you're left is a residual attitude within the squad of the players that you haven't been able to move on. I mean, that could be seen in the players that we brought on Saturday to change the game. Martial, Maguire and Van der Beek. We've seen all of those players long enough to know, first of all, that they're not really game changers. Martial could have been, but you don't bring him on to change a game. And fundamentally, the bigger point, the wider point is we know, and this isn't a criticism, it's a fact based on what's happened, they are not going to play in a Manchester United team that wins the league title. Unfortunately, they're not good enough for that. So now it's a matter of finding them the best place, or do they stay and we continue to achieve what we have been achieving? And obviously, they've been staying where they are. They've stayed longer than other players who've moved on. That means that other teams are wary of bringing them in, so we've not been able to move them on. And they know, those players know, that in a normal situation where we don't have an injury crisis, they're really surplus to this manager's plans. In Maguire's case, you've got the potential position for it in the team and the idea that there's an international tournament to think of, and you don't have that with Van der Beek and Martial. But even then, really, Southgate picks Maguire regardless of his position in the squad, so he doesn't have to worry about that. What I mean is that's a situation that Ten Hag can't fix until a transfer window or until a team is willing to take them on or until the contract runs out. So he's literally overseeing that moment when they move on, and you're going to need that manager in place to make sure. I mean, yeah, all right, he's overseeing the exit of Ronaldo, this big stuff that's happened with Greenwood and with Antony, and he's looking like a strong authority figure. You have to give him enough power to oversee that next part of the transition, because that's a crucial one. And it's not necessarily player power, but those are the players that do for the manager eventually. And that's what happens. That's why you see, well, in my opinion, it's why you do see a lot of form like this. Like I said, Ten Hag can't fix this, and his successor couldn't fix it because he's going to inherit the same squad, but then there are going to be different players with different issues. You know, like it might be Onana. He might decide that you know, a new manager might say, I've had enough of Onana already. And then you've got a player on a long contract who you might not be able to move on. Now, the issue that you've got can be fixed with certain elements. First of all, Ten Hag, but you've got to have patience to see Ten Hag over that entire part of the process, or take over where the financial implications become such that you don't have to worry about writing the players off in terms of fees or in terms of wages. And that's going to take time. It's all a matter of time, and you can't fix that. You can't fix that here and now. That's an issue that's there, and it's going to impact results and performances from now until the moment that they go. So supporters, anyone watching this or listening to this, you've got to buckle up, because this is what's going to happen for possibly the rest of the season. You're going to see a lot of low performances until hopefully we get a full complement of players. Paul, am I being too pessimistic with that? Is there another thing from what the options are on the table that Ten Hag can try?
I don't think there really is. I mean, everyone's got their own idea, but I think everyone is talking, still kind of talking as if it's got to be there, where I think at the moment it's just a case of trying to get back a little bit of quality, better performances, and maybe think of, you know, looking now, maybe say at the moment, that Europe Champions League next season is not going to be there, because at the moment, performance-wise, they're nowhere near a top four side. They're a long way off of that, and it's just about getting the, trying to get the right players fit, trying to get the right players playing together, and trying to get continuity back. And that comes from trying to play the same team for a few games. It keeps making changes, too many changes, I think, as we saw at the weekend. So I just think he needs to add continuity. That's the only way you actually get success, yeah, in my opinion, even in today's world of having players, managers kind of having to make changes to try and keep players happy. I don't think players are entirely happy coming on with, in overtime, you know, 12 minutes of overtime, getting 3 minutes or whatever, but that's the way the game is now. But I just think he needs to do that. And the right player, the players that he believes in, he's got to play and make it obvious to those players that they're not wanted. And then the onus falls on them, and they're the ones who have to be embarrassed in walking around Manchester, Old Trafford or Carrington, because they know in themselves they're not wanted. And it's been proven time and time again is that everyone knows the players who are not wanted by him. And I just think I really can't find a way what he can do about it, because when you, the players you just mentioned, you know, you talked about, a lot of it stems from Ollie, is the contracts they were given. Yeah. And Edward Woodward, they were given ridiculous contracts. They didn't achieve anything. They didn't do anything which was, you know, the club, yes, you know, the club won Europa League and a League Cup, but great, but that's not Manchester United. all of a sudden, these players got rewarded with these unbelievable contracts.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Shaw, Maguire, I think even maybe even Martial, I don't know, improvements. And you're just seeing Rashford just now. I'm thinking where we are now, you can't trust people to give them these big contracts, because they seem to want to sit back on it. Any drive that might be there is gone. And the same as anything in life, the only way you get anything from people, because it's because they're human, is the fact of giving them an incentive.
Yeah.
I mean, when I went to United, I went there. It wasn't so much about wages, because I could have got more money and stayed in London. I went there for a reason, and it wasn't about winning league titles. I went because it was Manchester United. And it's when I got there that I suddenly then realised, by the way everyone was talking, even if I was walking down the street, it was about got to try and win a league again. And that's when it suddenly got embedded in me, because I spent so long just being there and playing other places and just playing football, and every win was about, you know, to get this bonus, to get that bonus. You go to United and it's about winning the league. You don't even really ask about bonuses, even though the bonuses at United when I was there weren't great, because the fact of you're expected to win a lot of games, so then you'll get more money. But yeah, to give people up front and pay them so much, and I think every club in this league have got the same problems, because they feel they have to, because if they don't, they'll lose that player, because the player will go and choose somewhere, will give him what he's looking for. So they feel they've got to do it. And all of a sudden, the moment you're doing that, you've got somebody who you can't rely on. If you've got somebody who's got a certain amount of goals to score, clean sheets, or you make the actual fact of winning, how many points what you get for a draw, what you get, and you give them that big incentive to take a bit more, you're going to get more from those players. You drop down into the first and second division, those players live and die off of that. They live and die off of winning games of football. Yeah. They live and die on the fact of relegation and promotion, but not in that league. They don't do it because the moment, oh, we're going to get relegated. Oh, don't worry about it because I've got it written in my contract. If we get relegated, they'll have to sell me at that. So I'll go back into the Premier League and someone will take me.
Yeah.
So, what a great life that is at this moment. So there's no great drive or passion, in my humble opinion, in the majority of players now to what there was in yesteryear.
Yeah.
And I think you can just see that when I'm seeing players who are happy, someone runs away from the ball and they're virtually saying, oh, that's his problem, rather than it being your problem, in the fact of you might have given the ball away or you're seeing your mate in trouble, but they're not willing to run back. If I saw someone sprinting back and decides that he can win the ball, but he tries to win it, gives away a silly foul. Yes, it was silly. But you'll have to turn around and say, oh, well, what a great, to go back and help his mate. But I see people running back, and I know I've diversed a bit, and I see somebody lose the ball, and I've seen them on quite a few of them just jogging back. And then when they get back, because maybe the game's been stopped by a free kick or gone out, not one person has pointed a finger at them. Not one person has had a go at them. What a great life that is.
Yeah.
You know, you get back late in after school as a kid, you get back late because you're playing with your mates in the park. You get a rollicking off your parents. Can you imagine if your parents didn't care and just let you carry on as normal? Yeah. You become a delinquent because you can do what you want.
Yeah.
You ain't got nothing now. You're not probably just carrying as, oh, I can do this. So I don't see anybody telling anybody that they're being lazy. Now and that would hurt, by the way. When you take a rollicking off a teammate and it's on a pitch and it's justified, you don't take it that way because you'll try and go, hold a minute, don't put this on me. It's 30, 40, 50, 50, you're putting it all on me. But you know it's you. It hurts you. And it's up to you then to sort it out with your mates at the end of the game or at half time.
Yeah.
You go and do that, Wayne. But no one does it. I'm not seeing no confidence, no arguments. And I know I'm not turning around and actually saying you want that, but you want somebody just to be telling people so they know. And then the manager mostly knows it, but if he sees maybe his leaders in his team having a go at this individual, he's going to go, oh, I need to deal with this now because my players are telling me that player's a problem. Even though I can see little bits, they're the ones who actually gone, yep, bang, he's a problem. And there's too many problems in that team. And then one of the other problems is there's nobody out there who's actually doing that, to be perfectly honest. The man with the armband has got enough problems sorting himself out, to be perfectly honest. So that's the problem with United. They haven't got within the club an actual captain.
Yeah. Just a couple of comments before I come to you, Dave. Patrick says, I'm loath to voice this opinion. I've felt for a while. We can't win the bigger prizes with Bruno and Rashford in the team. Productive on goals and assists, but detrimental to general play. There's an old saying about addition by subtraction. Basically, take the risk of letting Maguire, Donny, Martial go. And then far from the only ones, by the way. They're just the three players who came on Saturday. That's why I mentioned them. And be short of numbers initially before building up again. Dave, Paul talked a lot there about, and very, very, you know, I don't think you or I would disagree with anything he said in terms of incentive because, you know, that's long been a suspicion we've had in conversations on and off the podcast in terms of, you know, there's no incentive for these players to achieve in the same way. And the way that you can manipulate that incentive is to control the very career at United, basically, and United haven't been good enough. They've not been able to be ruthless enough with moving players on in terms of, you know, I remember they did it with Sanchez and with Lukaku relatively quickly, and you thought, all right, that's fairly ruthless. That's a high standard you've failed to achieve. But then you look at Lukaku, and maybe it was just because there was a lot of money that they could get for him, and it wasn't a matter of being ruthless at all, really. And obviously there's been interference. We know that Ed Woodward's gone on record as admitting that in the past. You know, the big thing with Paul mentioned it, the Martial contract when Mourinho was quite happy to move him on And, you know, we ended up sacking Mourinho before Solskjaer was even appointed. Gave Martial a new contract, which told you everything about the direction of what was happening with the club at that moment in time. But in terms of Ten Hag, from a supporter's point of view, because I mean, I don't think we can add much really to what Paul said in terms of the incentive. But from a supporter's point of view, obviously the finger's being pointed at Ten Hag. And people are starting to say, like, oh, maybe he's a problem and blah, blah, blah. Patrick said in the comments earlier about needing patience. But Paul made a couple of great comments about how it's a different game now. You know, like players have got, you know, they've got different incentives. They've got the different contracts and things like that. They're not particularly looking at winning all the time. It's not a must to them. That's the thing that Ten Hag has got to change, because obviously it has to be a must for him and the club. So how does he manage that? Is there, I mean, from my perspective, from my personal perspective, I don't think it matters if we get to Champions League this season, because the problem that we've got is much bigger than that. It's a bigger cultural attitude problem, and it needs to be approached on a game-by-game basis, which I thought Ten Hag had managed last season by what Paul had said. That continuity in the team, you know, he'd achieved that and it made every game important. Obviously, unable to do that at the moment because of the injury problem, but still, that the entire culture seems to be slipping away from that. Do you put that down to the injury crisis? How much blame do you put on the manager? What can he do in the meantime? Considering there are a few problems there, you know, obviously, people are going to be looking at the Champions League qualification as the be-all and end-all. Are you agreeing with me in terms of like that's not really that important for United? What I'm trying to say is, how bad does it get before you start being concerned about Ten Hag's contribution to this?
I mean, for me, I think we need to stick with Ten Hag, because, and for me, it's kind of an indefinite thing with Ten Hag, because I think he's done so many good things in the past year alone. His hands are tied from a financial aspect. Yes, he has spent over 400 million, but he spent 400 million on players that the likes of Real Madrid and Manchester City, for want of a better word, didn't want. I mean, I've said this for a long time, for the past 10, 15 years, especially in the last 10 years, and it's not just a coincidence that Fergie quit at that time, and Wenger has said in the past he left because he just couldn't handle these players coming up, you know, they're earning so much more money than he was. Is there another job on the planet? Because it is a job at the end of the day, where the employee earns more than the boss. I mean, where does that happen? It's not in a regular job. A CEO at Apple is not on less than the guy that's on the production line that's actually doing all the work. It just doesn't happen. It only happens in football. There is no incentive anymore. I mean, Paul spoke about when he went to United, his drive wasn't money. It was playing for Manchester United. I mean, we go back to that story that Gordon Hill told us, that when he signed for Manchester United, he went upstairs, he sat with the doc, he sat with the chairman, and then he came back downstairs after agreeing to come to the club, and he said he had to go back upstairs to ask him what his wages were, because it never crossed his mind. It never came into his head. Those days are long gone. So the situation we're at now, and it's not just Manchester United, and Paul had said it earlier on, it's pretty much every club. You're trying to bring in the best players that have no drive. And unfortunately, Ten Hag's hands are tied on that. Because every club's the same. I mean, I look at Manchester City. I don't see many players in Manchester City that are going to kill themselves to win a title. I just see a bunch of players that are better than everyone else in the same job, just that slightly bit better, and they're on more money. There's bigger fees being paid. I mean, so that's the era we're in right now, is that the person with the most money, and you could say, well, that's been the case all the time. Not necessarily. I mean, when if the player doesn't have the drive, it doesn't matter how much money you're going to give them. You just have to, the players that are winning the league these days are just that little bit better. It doesn't mean they're driven by more success. I don't believe so. I think players nowadays, and I know it's not a nice thing to say, but it's true. they're only driven by one thing, and that's the amount of money they're going to get every week and what they're going to get at the end of their contract in these loyalty bonuses and stuff like that. That's all they're driven by. And it's just unfortunate that Ten Hag's hands are tied when it comes to signing the better players. Because make no mistake, Ten Hag is a very, very good manager. I wanted him for many years. And when we got him, I thought, okay, there's one massive team that we have now, is that a really, really good manager. But on the business side of it, it's still a shit show. And until we move these owners on and someone else comes in that's going to spend the money, and that's the unfortunate thing, that you're going to have to spend all that money. This is going to continue. We're going to have highs and massive lows. We spoke earlier in a couple of podcasts about Harry Maguire not going to Man City. Going to West Ham. And I kind of agreed with that. If the club have agreed to give him a certain amount of money for the next 3 years, whatever's left in his contract, but they want to move him on, they committed to that money, they should just pay him and move him on. The fact that they wouldn't pay out $7 million is a hell of a lot of money, even for today's footballers. It's a lot of money. So Manchester United, as Paul said earlier on, have made these mistakes and these massive contracts and rewarding people for doing nothing. Now they have to actually put their hand in their pocket. And if you want to move these players on, they have to pay them out and move them on. Because if they don't, the smell is just going to linger in the club. We're going to have players that, as you know, as you said, Paul said also earlier on, that the other players know that the manager doesn't want them there. It's obvious he doesn't want Scott McTominay. It's obviously he doesn't want Van de Beek. It's obviously he doesn't want Maguire. It's obviously he doesn't want Martial. Three of those players came on Saturday. What do you think the rest of the team is thinking? They're thinking, well, what are we supposed to do here? You know, we're bringing on players that the manager doesn't want here. It's a massive, massive problem. It's a weighing answer all the way around to come back to the original answer, our question. And for me, Ten Hag has massive kudos in the bank for me. I think it would be a huge, huge, huge mistake to even talk about moving him on, because I think he is the real deal. He's just, there's certain aspects at the club that's preventing him from doing his job. You know, it's like asking someone to race the Tour de France on one wheel. Ain't gonna happen, you know. You'll get a little bit down the road, but that's about it. But at the end of the day, no, there's no question mark for me about Ten Hag. You know, there is times where I get frustrated, like on Saturday, or when I'm like, why isn't he playing Hannibal? You know, and why is Amrabat a left back? But that doesn't mean that in the overall sense of getting rid of him, should be looked at. I think he's an absolutely fantastic manager. And we've said this a couple of times now, my biggest fear, I had this fear, and then it quadrupled when Paul brought in the fact that if he wants to save his reputation, he could move on. I never even thought of that. And I'm thinking that's even more of a concern now, that he could move on. Because if he said, oh, I've had enough of this, Paul's right. You know, other clubs are looking at him and go, well, this guy has certain levels that he wants to achieve, or he has a baseline and he doesn't want to fall below that. And by quitting Manchester United, which is a real option, it really is, as things rumble on, he goes up, you know, a couple of levels in other clubs' estimation. I mean, Real Madrid, Carlo Ancelotti is supposedly, well, I think it's been announced that he's leaving at the end of the season. You know, Tuchel at Bayern Munich, unless he does a really, you know, good job of the Champions League, these are the teams we have to fear. Not getting rid of the manager walking away.
No, I completely agree. Dan says, the problem right now is the Glazers are selling. I suspect they've put values on their balance sheet. I think that's the heart of the current issue. Any variations on the costs forecast will have a multiple attached to it and give room for negotiation to a buyer. And it doesn't help us fans. It certainly doesn't help creating the right culture. But I'm convinced it is a big factor. You're not wrong, I don't think. Difficult times and difficult sort of moment for Ten Hag to navigate. But we all have to be patient with that, because that's the only choice we've got. Supposedly, you wouldn't want to make a change when there's such turmoil at the club anyway. You need strong leadership. That's what you need. That's what you actually need. Paul, one very quick thing on Palace before we move on. Paul Parker's ref watch. I know that you're keen to get off and watch Dermot like usual, but it's been another eventful week for referees and great decisions. Obviously, there's a one at Old Trafford, the penalty appeal on Ward. In real time, I didn't think that it was on the replay. Maybe you've seen them given, you've seen them not given. That's the point, that you've seen them given and not given throughout the season. And then obviously there was the absolute nonsense that went on with the Liverpool game yesterday. I mean, I think it's funny that Liverpool have put out a statement and everything like that, but they've got a point, not got a point in asking for a game to replay, or that they, as a club, deserve action over any other. But the point is the standard, and the VAR this season has been an absolute nonsense. And it was on show Liverpool yesterday, well, against Liverpool on Saturday with the offside, and you could argue with the red cards. I mean, anyway, they've got a right to be aggrieved at the result and the way that it happened. What do you make of the weekend's fun and festive action with the referees?
Well, it's no surprise, really, to be perfectly honest. I think you've forgotten a bit. I mean, it's not the most outstanding fixture in the world, really, Nottingham Forest beat Brentford, but there was two handballs, and the incident with the goalkeeper on Wissa. Was absolutely incredible. Here's another football adage. If that was outside the box, that would be a foul and a yellow card. VAR would look at it because the person would have jumped in with his scissors. Yeah. So VAR would have looked at it as that's how it is. Yet there's no penalty. There's nothing. Nothing at all. It's cleared off the line, put out for they got a corner. And it was absolute madness. It was silly, and the whole thing now has got embarrassing. I was chatting to someone this morning in the gym. I didn't really need him. I'm there on a cross trainer and he wants to talk to me. I've got sweat pouring all down my face. Not the best time to talk to somebody. And he started talking about, he was at the Spurs game. And we're chatting away and he said, Paul, he goes, I thought when VAR first come in, I thought he was going to take away all the banter in the pubs and everything about football, because everything's just going to be bang, we're going to be like American football and like that. Everything's correct. Yeah. And he goes, this is causing more aggressive conversations now, because we only had one person. We turned around, the referee was this, the referee was that. He's human, he makes mistakes. And the assistant got an offside wrong. Now we've got people sit in a room and they've got everything allowing them just to flick back quickly and go bang, mistake, bang, in the ear. So we do need them now. I don't know why, but they seem to be against it. They won't, there's no debates on it at all. So again, this has been hidden. Another thing hidden away from the people, not just in football, in life in general. We need to ask, why won't you allow referees to go hear their conversation with VAR? Why won't they do it? Because they're hiding something. I would say on the other side of it, now it needs an independent person in that room with them to find out what's going on, why they're making that decision. For that person not to go in there and know the job better than them, but for that person to be there and just go, oh, why is that for? Because he's there. For something that might go out of their head, and you've got to know yourself, Wayne, I hate going to, I never go to, only unless I know the people who I'm with in there, or I know people around it, or I go to my mate's bar. I never go into bars to watch football. Because you never watch it properly, because someone wants to shout over there. You've got people in your ear talking all the time, and you're constantly switching off. And you look, if you've got three, four people in the room, doesn't matter what they're doing, someone's going to say something. It's going to detract from what you're doing. Especially if you're working, you're going to turn around and look at something. So I just think there's so many distractions going on in there to make that mistake and not to recorrect it. That Liverpool one I'm on about, when you had every chance to do it, but you thought, oh, I could just let that get away and that won't come back and haunt me. And not unless they sat there after thinking to themselves, oh my God, we're in serious trouble here. It doesn't make any sense. So there's been a shout for ages, and people throw it up that it needs ex-professional footballers in there. It just needs an independent football person in there just to ask quite obvious, relevant questions about, oh, why did you do that? Or why isn't that? just to kind of keep these people on their toes, to be perfectly honest, because they, because like anything, they get this alter ego comes in. And to be perfectly honest, I've watched this referee, Darren England, referee a lot of games. He likes himself.
Yeah.
He's rude to people. He's disrespectful the way he looks at people. I've never seen a person give out a yellow card like he's handing out a prison sentence. Yeah. You know, the man, you know, when I found out it was him, it was unbelievable. So that's my take on it. It needs now a change. If not right now, it's got to happen next season. Just someone to be in there. Could be you, Wayne, just to sit in there and just ask them. Well, no, but just to ask, I know they're not the most interesting people in the world. You'd rather sit next to rocket scientists and to a bunch of referees, to be perfectly honest. But you need just to ask them a question. Ask just why you're doing. If that one's there, oh, you're giving it offside, but what about him there? And you might not see that. You might not look at bottom of the screen or something. You don't know. But something, they might have switched off. They need help. So even though it was Liverpool, I'm going to turn around and say that there was something, what happened there was an absolute shock. You know, it was shocking what's happened for football, happened to Liverpool. And the Tottenham fan I was with, St. Paul, he goes, I was happy we won, but I was thought to myself, it's not the way to win a game of football when with things like that going on. And just as well with a referee, I believe as well now, we need yellow cards looked at. Because I look at Jota's booking, the lad cheated. He kicked his own feet and he went down. Jota gets a yellow card. The second one was ridiculous what he got. He was silly to do that straight after. But we've got to look at the yellow cards now. Too many people are getting, and it's ruining games, it's ruining players. Managers get panicky now. The moment a player gets a yellow card, managers panic, fans panic, get him off, he can't do this. Other fans are saying, want him sent off every time he makes a tackle. At one point, you was allowed to make tackles in the game, but you was unlucky because a player showed a great bit of skill. But not anymore, a great bit of skill, and you get it wrong and you catch him, you get a yellow card. So rather than commending the person who's done the great bit of skill, they just turn around and go, no, have a yellow card because it's my job and I don't like you and this game's not about you, it's about me because I wear black and I look good. I'm full time. Yeah. No, they're not important, these referees. Saw a great referee, so you tell me a little short bit, saw a referee, I was just, referee, what's his name? I go, oh, it's Graham Scott. Oh, who's that then? Oh, he comes on, he's been around for years, didn't know his name. Referee didn't know he was there. That's a referee.
Yeah. Well, they're all celebrities now. So a couple of funny comments coming in. Patrick says, in spite of Spurs-Liverpool debacle, I'm even more convinced that Garnacho's winner at the Emirates was onside. Might petition my local MP about replaying the match. Dan says, VAR has to be either fully automated and not be implemented until that's the case, or just binned. Well, there definitely needs to be massive reform. I just think, like, you know, Spurs benefiting from this. I mean, they cried 19 years ago to bring in video technology when Roy Carroll made that wonder save against Pedro Mendes. I mean, what we needed then and what we need now is reliable lines. Any reliable line would have told you that didn't go in. And a reliable line would have told you that Garnacho's goal at the Emirates would have counted. And that's what we need. We just need lines.
Just a couple of things. Sorry, Wayne.
Before you interrupt me, I will let you say his piece. I'm not letting that one slide, thinking that I'm so dull that I should sit in a referee's room for 2 hours every Saturday. Well, I don't know what punishment I deserve for that, but
I don't think it's a bad little gig, by the way. Sometimes it beats sitting in the stadium with the big ear things on and freezing, sitting there like that, sit in the room for a while. I can deal with maybe four blooming rocket scientists next to me just to stay in the warm, so I'm not knocking it. I wasn't disrespecting you by saying that way, and if you're taking that way, I can only apologise.
I get enough abuse as it is. I don't need to be the man responsible for ruining every team. I already get accused for ruining Manchester United for just sitting there supporting the team. Dave, go on. Quick thoughts on VAR.
Well, I mean, Paul kind of stole my thunder there because I was going to say that in the NFL, you know, which is in a high contact sport, as we know, decisions are made instantly. I watch NFL every week. I've been watching it for 15 years when I moved to America. And it's mind-blowing that it takes so long for a decision when, if you watch the NFL, I'm not sure if you do, a lot of the calls are made in the middle of, you know, of a down and a scrum, whatever it is, bodies are flying everywhere, and you think to yourself, how has someone seen that so quickly, you know? But then Paul said to put you in the room, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, now if Wayne's in the room, we're going to have halftime concerts while he's debating what actually happened. While we're waiting for it. But the biggest thing for me with VAR is that it's two things. One, it's you know, as Dan said, until it's fully automated, get rid of it, bin it. You can go backwards. There was a journalist on Twitter earlier on that saying, we can't go backwards. We can, of course we can. We can get rid of it. It's ridiculous. It's making too many mistakes. And the referees association's answer to it is, oh, let's not let that boy referee next week. How's that going to improve him? You know what I mean? That now there's so much pressure on referees now, and because they're in the spotlight as well, that they just make these mistakes. And now it's actually fed into the room where we were led to believe that all these human error mistakes were going away because technology was going to make sure of that. You know, goal line technology is the only one that really works, with the exception of Roy Carroll, but it wasn't around back then. But the biggest thing for me, other than some of these decisions, is that, and it's got gradually worse over time, is when you score, you don't know whether you've scored.
Yeah.
You're waiting for that 5, 6, 7 seconds, unless it's a clear ball's crossed in, back of the net. And even at that, you're thinking, well, what happened two passes back? Will that affect it? We all go to these games because, number one, we love our clubs, and number two, the euphoria of scoring. They've taken away that second one. They really have. And for probably 60, 70% of the goals that are scored. I mean, if I'm not at Old Trafford, I'm here watching the game. As soon as they score, I'm half afraid to even celebrate because you're like, you've got to give it that 4 to 5 seconds before you can celebrate to see if it's a real goal. That is mental. That's what we pay to go and see. That's why we love football. We love that massive high it gives you. But now it's like when we score, you have 4 seconds of depression. You're like, oh my God, is it a goal? Is it a goal? Is it really a goal? Oh, it's really a goal. And even sometimes that takes a minute, which is absolutely ridiculous. So that for me is the single reason why we should bin that piece of crap.
I would say, you know, the good thing about following United this season is that we're not scoring many goals, so you don't even get... I was going to say you don't get 4 seconds of depression, but you get 90 minutes instead, don't you? But just to save you a few more minutes of depression, because we've talked so much about putting Paul on ref watch, I don't think we're going to review the games for Galatasaray and Brentford. So if you can't preview the games, you can't get them wrong. But Paul and Dave will be back next week to talk about. I'm going to be making no team selections and predictions about putting Anibal in or out because of how wrong I was. So we won't be doing that. But we'll be back next week to talk about the games and the results. Hopefully, talking about 2 wins and at least we're playing different teams, so we might get them. If you've watched on YouTube, if you can like and subscribe and share the video, really appreciate that. And if you've watched the replay, comment. We do reply to the comments. And if you're listening back on the audio podcast as well, if you can subscribe and leave a review on the platform you're listening on. We'll be back next week, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.